Thanks for downloading the Overdrive podcast. Do not forget to follow us on Instagram at TSN1050, where there will be Insta stories, some best of clips from the show, and some very cool contest opportunities to win tickets and more. Again, on Instagram at TSN1050.
It's Mail It In Friday.
Just what in the hell do you think you're doing?
It's Mail It In Friday.
Certainly there's nothing wrong with a little feast on our time.
Yeah, whatever.
You just gotta keep living, man. L-I-V-I-N.
This is Overdrive on TSN 1050, the official voice of the Leafs.
Scott MacArthur for Brian Hayes. Hayes will be back on Monday. Craig Button for, well, I'm saying Jamie Noodles McLennan. Jonas Siegel for the O-Dog, Jeff O'Neill. And O will be back on Monday as well. Dave Poulin to join us in studio here in just a few minutes. We'll get to our Friday's five-pack in a second. Just want to make sure that are we set to go? Our five favorite Pats ahead of St. Patty's Day.
I got my five.
You've got your five?
Yeah.
Okay, let's see how creative we get.
He keeps asking me to give him a high five.
All right, classic. High five.
Five beers.
They were all out of six packs. Weird, huh?
Friday, five pack.
Top five.
The Friday five pack is brought to you by Cool Beer Brewery. Craig, your five favorite.
Well, I'm not going first.
You're not going first? All right, Jonas, go first.
There's only one hockey player in this bunch.
Okay.
So I'll start with him, Patrick Marleau. I think now that he's playing in Toronto, it seems like this might not be fair, but people are coming around to that he's a Hall of Famer and like his numbers are just insane. But because he's like quiet and he played in San Jose, it maybe didn't take before. So he's number one. Patrick Ewing. I don't know what else I need to say about Patty Ewing. Pat Summitt, the great women's college basketball coach. I can't remember the record they had, but they had some crazy. It was also her and Jean Ariema, I think, at UConn had this rivalry. I don't know super details about it.
Yeah, was it the UConn women's team that won 111 in a row or something
just
like that?
Yeah, crazy.
Unbelievable.
Her sister was on that team?
Yeah.
Okay, so Pat Sajak?
Yes. Wheel of Fortune.
Wheel of Fortune. Do you guys still watch that show?
I haven't watched it in years.
I haven't watched it since I was a kid. And the final one, Scotty, for you, Pat Hankin.
I love it. I didn't come up with that one.
Yeah. Remember how good he was?
He was awesome. The Cy Young Award year of 96.
Yeah, I used to love watching him go first, and then Guzman would go second. I just always thought that was like an unusual 1-2 and fun to watch, and both were good.
And he emerged in 93 and was a big, big part of that rotation of that second World Series team.
Mm-hmm.
I like that.
Went off
it's a
the board.
Good list. I'll go second. My two favorite head coaches in my 30-plus years as a Leafs fan both have the first name Pat. So I'll go in order. Pat Burns and Pat Quinn. I'm going with Pat Verbeek. Danica Patrick. And I'm going off the board here because it's our five favorite Pats. I do believe Rob Gronkowski is a Pat, as in a Patriot.
Bending the rules.
Bit of a curveball. Throwing you a curveball. Mr. Button.
Pat Quinn. I mean, the big Irishman. I mean, there's no way. He was a good coach. He's a phenomenal person. There's just no way I can go past him. I had Patrick Ewing, too. And March Madness, you know. So we remember Georgetown winning.
Yeah.
But I also remember the big upset when Villanova beat them. Mm. And that was a huge upset in the NCAA tournament. But Patrick Ewing was big time. Craig Patrick.
Oh, good.
You know, and the family, the Patrick family. I mean, you talk about legendary families in sport, the Patrick family, Craig Patrick, Pat LaFontaine.
Loved them. As a kid.
And you know what? I had Pat Summitt down, but I'm going to just defer because she was a great coach.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to go with St. Patrick Waugh.
I can't hear you because I have the Stanley Cup rings clogging my ears.
Is he going to get another job in the NHL, do you think? I don't know, as a coach or as like a manager?
It's an interesting question, Jonas. And I think, like, I really admired Patrick with respect to him going back to junior, riding the buses, and really learning how to coach. Like, I really did. He went and, you know, that old saying about the rubber hitting the road. I mean, he went and the rubber did hit the road there. And I thought when he came to the NHL, you know, he had really developed as a coach and really was well-suited to take over an NHL team. I really felt that. Now, the personality, which we all know has a certain volatility to it, didn't help him. And the manner in which he left the Colorado Avalanche, I don't think, you know, those are things that just are easily forgotten. So based on his talent as a coach, I wouldn't hire him as a manager because I don't think he can be emotional like that as a manager. I think he warrants another opportunity, but there might have to be a certain period of time that has to pass before people start to consider him. Hmm. That's just my own thought on him.
Yeah, because he quit in Colorado, right?
Yes, that is the key word, quit.
Right, and he did it at a real tough time. I mean,
yeah,
Joe Sakic
was August, didn't he?
Right, he was in a tough place. And Jared Bednar, I mean, they went to the Lake Erie Monsters, their AHL team.
It was too late. All the coaches had been hired.
Right.
Jared's turned out to be a real good coach. I'm really happy for him. He was a good coach coming up. He won the East Coast League, won the American League. I'm really happy Joe Sakic gave him an opportunity to come back this year because it was dysfunctional last year. But he took his toys out of the sandbox and went home. Not only did he not quit, he quit in a huff. And he quit, and he left them high and dry and in a real lurch. And to me, that's what hangs over Patrick Roy at this point.
Well, because of the volatile personality, my first thought would be you'd have to have a relationship with Patrick Roy if you were his superior, his boss, his general manager.
You mean like Joe Sakic, well, and then, Stanley Cup.
Exactly.
He wasn't afraid to throw him under the bus.
Exactly. So my first thought is you've got to have a relationship with a guy. And then secondly, well, no, wait, that doesn't matter because, as Craig said, they were teammates forever, won a couple of Stanley Cups together, and it didn't matter if they were buddies or not, or maybe they had a falling out for a period of time. If Patrick's not getting his way, he might just pull the shoot on you.
Isn't that what happened in Montreal, too? Basic, sort of-ish?
When he got traded?
Yeah. Like, I remember Francois Allaire telling me the story one day, and my mind was, like, blown, but wasn't it that something along the lines of he kind of just lost it and that he was gone?
Well, what had happened was is that Jacques Demers had coached the team, and they'd won a Stanley Cup, and essentially, you know, Patrick was the guy. And Jacques really knew how to handle the star players. He really did. And he knew that as those guys go, so do I. And, you know, there was a lot of leeway that Patrick got, but Patrick performed. So when they made the changes and Mario Tremblay came in, Mario didn't believe in some of those things. And Patrick was like, what do you mean you don't believe in those things? I deliver. I just need this. There was kind of like a clawback on Patrick on some of the things, and it led to a lot of friction to the point where, you know, we all know the infamous night against the Detroit Red Wings and, you know, and really to the benefit of the Colorado Avalanche.
Yeah, I mean, that whole 5 or 6 year period, and stay with me on this, the whole Lindros situation in Quebec and how that all went down and the trade with Philadelphia, fast forward a few years, because of the haul they got for Lindros, the Nordique did. Oh, Fast forward a few years, that trade doesn't happen if they're still the Quebec Nordique, because there's absolutely no way the Montreal Canadiens are trading Patrick Roy to the Quebec Nordique. That's just not allowed. Like, not even the start of a discussion. But they've moved to Colorado earlier that year, and obviously the two sides were able to come together on a deal when it all fell through with Patrick and the Habs.
Well, Pierre Lacroix, who was the general manager in Colorado, had also been Patrick's agent. So he knew Patrick intimately, you know, and you know, understood that, like, this was an opportunity. You talk about acting on opportunity. Pierre Lacroix, boom, was right there. And, you know, he ended up trading Jocelyn Thibault back to the Montreal Canadiens. So, you know, a French-Canadian goalie comes back. Martin Rosinski ended up going in the deal. Man. Kovalenko went in the deal. But, I mean, at the end of the day, Pierre just... I'm pretty sure that Rajon Houle could have probably still asked for more players, and Pierre was just going, keep asking because I'm getting the guy that I need.
Jeez, I must have been stuck in traffic a long time yesterday because this brings up another conversation that you were having with Hayes and Noodles yesterday, and I think it was the Rays segment.
You better get the best guy in the trade.
It's the quality versus quantity trade where, and I think Erik Karlsson was the topic of conversation. You trade Erik Karlsson, you're not getting a better player in return in that trade. You might get three or four or five or six pieces, but they could just be pieces.
Well, it's like if you're talking with Tampa, and they would say no to this, but, okay, you want Karlsson. The only way we're doing it, you give me Sergachev. We'll do it straight up, but I want Sergachev. And the Lightning will say, no, thank you. But, like, that's the kind of thing you would have to get. Because at least, like, that one guy, he's not a lot of things, but he could be a star, and he could be a...
100% with you. I think there's too much quantity bandied about in deals in all leagues. Get quality. Get quality and focus. Always focus in on quality. Don't be focused. Oh, yeah, well, we got a first-round pick, and we got a third-round pick that might be a second, and we got a B prospect, and we got a C prospect. And our guys really like this prospect who nobody's ever heard of, right? And you start adding them up, and you know what it adds up to? Not very much.
Right. And then hindsight, because people forget, you trade draft picks or whatever the case may be, people forget, that first round pick, which turned out to be number 18 or number 21, was a part of that deal, and they got this guy, and he only played 50 career NHL games, and you don't usually trace it back to the trades, because we're just inundated with information day after day after day after day after day. We can't possibly keep it all in our heads. I mean, if you don't hit, it can set you back considerably.
Well, and if you hit, you're probably hitting on one of those things. Like if you get four, maybe you're hitting on one, maybe you're hitting on two. Like the Leafs with Kessel, and that's like a really tough situation. At least like they got a player, like Kapanen's a player, not a star, but a player. And then they use that pick to help them get Anderson. But did they win that trade? No. Because like you're trading the best player, you're never going to win the trade. So at least get one thing like that's, I don't know, special.
If you can.
If you can. Like right? In that situation, his value was nothing. Like,
well, and
it was at his lowest. Like, he was coming off a tough year. The team was in chaos. But it's, I don't know. It's going to be hard for the Senators because, like, they're in a tough spot where teams know that they don't have a lot of leverage.
But to your point, focus in on quality from the get-go. That's what you got to do. Focus in on quality. And if it's two players and you feel that they're two players that are going to help your team, you're right. You're not getting a better player or a player as good for Erik Karlsson unless you're getting Doughty or Hedman and you're not getting those guys, right? So, you know, focus in on the quality that you can get from those players and put everything else aside.
I heard the door open.
Yeah.
Somebody is wandering in. Here he is.
Hi, David.
How are you?
Good. David Poulin has walked in. We're not on TV, so nobody knows who walked in. So we're going to talk about everything. He's got a nice sharp tie on.
Thank you.
Notre Dame did not make the NCAA March Madness tournament this year. First time in how many years, David?
A lot.
Yeah, it's a long time since they hadn't made it.
Ooh. That one hurts, but...
I'm here. How are you, gentlemen?
Just not been the same since David Poulin left Notre Dame.
We were on a roll when I was there.
There you go.
I was just telling Mulls we had St. Patrick's Day one time in my 4 years undergrad. They let it fall while we were in session, not on spring break. Didn't work out that well for the school. So at Greenfield on midnight between the 16th and 17th, Greenfield, of course, the green kegs of beer started, and then the bars opened at 7 a.m., and it was 5 cents a beer, and it went up 5 cents an hour. And then they made a decision, we will always have spring break over the 17th. We can't really deal with that again. So, good decision.
Yeah, smart move. Yeah, like,
the wise of the Irish.
See, we talk about, that's chaos.
That's chaos.
Dave Poulin's here, and our hockey insider.
There's nothing orderly about the Irish on St. Patrick's Day. Nothing orderly about it.
There's nothing orderly about Canadians or people of Scottish background or any background on... We all become Irish on
the
St.
honorary Irish that day.
Yeah. I've got my green sweater ready for tomorrow. Should be a fun weekend. How do you feel about... I mean, naturally, it's going to happen. The calendar dictates so. How do you feel about St. Patty's Day being on a Saturday? Craig,
you don't
was
really
saying,
get to vote on it or anything. I'm a weekday guy.
Craig was saying,
I'm a weekday guy.
There's the idea of kind of sneaking out, playing a little bit of hooky, coming back to work, doing all. You don't do that on a Saturday.
Yeah, you'd be stunned in the business world how many St. Paddy's Day traditions there are amongst the law firms and all the different corporate things that say, well, I always see that guy on St. Paddy's Day. And so when it's on a Saturday, it really throws off the working world, I think.
What did you do as a player? When there was St. Paddy's Day throughout the year,
played. Same thing we did on Christmas, Easter, everything else. We played.
The hardest thing was playing the day after St. Paddy's Day.
I think one year in Boston, where it's obviously very dramatic, we played on St. Patrick's Day. And you have to imagine the entire incoming crowd to the game being totally lit, like, long before puck drop.
Just quickly, how did that change any other time of the Boston Garden?
That's a good point.
All kidding aside, I'll tell you one of my funny St. Patrick's Day stories. In the minor leagues, they have St. Patrick themed days, and they in Kalamazoo they painted the ice green. Jamie Lagenbrunner was playing, so we're watching the game. It's on St. Patrick's Day. They got the special uniforms. We're watching the game and like the puck was like a bomb for Jamie, and like, you know, and he kept going like this, like in the game, like this. So after the game, I was like, what the hell was going on? Colorblind.
No.
Black puck on green ice is black on black.
And
he didn't know how it would impact, right? So he said he'd see somebody and look and he'd think, just like maybe the puck will hit my stick.
I wish I'd have thought of that as an excuse some nights.
But he was just so flat, and he's such a competitor. But if, you know,
oh, that would fluster you.
Especially a guy
especially
like him.
Yeah. Sure. Sure.
Dave Pullens here, and our Hockey Insider is brought to you by Finance It. We were, surprise, surprise, Pooley, talking about James Van Riemsdyk, because I don't know
good
if
player.
He's doing all right now.
Good player.
5 goals in the last 36, 48 hours or so. And it morphed into a conversation about where this goes for the Maple Leafs, and is there a way that they can make the term and dollar work to their satisfaction and to his satisfaction? And then the conversation morphed into the idea of having to be careful about falling in love with guys as they approach the age of 30, using a team like the Blackhawks as an example. Now, let's be honest, Chicago's had a little more success than Toronto over the last decade or so, but they are now hamstrung by some of the contracts that they've given to guys who were such a big part of their success through that decade as they go on the trail end of their career.
Yeah, interestingly enough, I think there's only one for me.
Is it Seabrook?
Seabrook. It's the only single one. Everything else was signed earlier, and mm-hmm. you know, you're in the midst, and you're a young guy, and you're in the midst of a 3-year cup run like Kane and Taves were. And don't forget, that cap was going up dramatically because of the Canadian dollar when that was signed. That cap was going in a different direction. So even that, but there are some interesting decisions to be made here, and part of it is just pure timing, because the inherited contracts of Komarov, of Bozak, of JVR were from our regime. And so they inherit contracts that they didn't really have to make decisions on players about. And so the timing of those decisions is now coming, you know, 3+ years into the new regime. Those contracts are coming due. And by the way, those guys are really playing well. Significant contributors. JVR is only 20 years old. And there are going to have to be decisions. The general start of a team gets much more challenging and difficult as it grows together, and now you have to make contract decisions. They really haven't had to make one yet in terms of stay or go. And this is the first sort of iteration that mm-hmm. is demanding that, because these three contracts are expiring. But if you remove those three players from this team, flat out a different team. Now you're going to replace them with someone. But for me, the hard part from day one this year, I thought Leo would have been the first to go because they thought they could replace him the easiest. The centerman is the next hardest one to replace, and Bozak, like him or not, very, you know, good NHL player. And you need NHL players to play in the NHL. And the third one and the hardest one to replace was the 6'4" left-hand shot, because they have lots of 6-foot right-hand shots in Kapanen and Nylander and Marner and lots of skill over there. They don't have a 6'4" left-hand shot who plays the front of the net. And he takes up a lot of space. And guys take up space in different ways. Some of them are real physical and clear space out. But some of them just take up space because they're really big and they have a big wingspan. And when you would watch Marner wheeling around that offensive zone, part of the space was created because of the presence of James Van Riemsdyk in front of the net. Hmm. And so now those decisions are going to have to be made. But I don't think Van Riemsdyk fits what they're thinking or didn't fit what they're thinking moving forward. The problem is now he has 31 goals.
Dave, do you think he'll age? Like, he's going to be 29 in May.
Really well.
Yeah.
Here's why.
He's crazy about the way he takes care of himself. Nope. I know that, but maybe it's
for a
different
reason. He will benefit from the Patrick Marleau aging process. Hmm. And the Patrick Marleau process was when Patrick first came into the league, he's not an overly physical guy. Well, neither was Van Riemsdyk. But Van Riemsdyk took more heat for not being physical. One, because he was a Philadelphia Flyer. And two, was because he was 6'4". Mm-hmm. And everyone wants a 6'4" guy to be more physical. When does that become an asset? When you're 28 years old and your mileage doesn't have those physical years on them.
But he doesn't have Marleau's skating.
No, he doesn't. But he doesn't have, what I'm saying, he doesn't have the physical mileage that a banger would have 10 years into the league.
Like a Milan Lucic.
Lucic is a classic example. Mm-hmm. Like, the mileage is higher because of the way he plays the game. But Van Riemsdyk is, now it switches for Marleau. Oh, he's 38 years old. He can still fly. No one ever says, well, he's not physical enough for us. Now, the game has changed to his benefit as well, just as the game has changed to James Van Riemsdyk's benefit. Like, if you can't knock a guy like that down in front of the net with a reach like that, how do you cover him?
Well, you know, when the whole rule package is changed in 2005 coming out of the lockout, there's a lot of talk about how that'll help the smaller player. Well, no, the greater benefit was to the bigger player.
How do you move him in front of the net?
Very accurate.
That's why Joe Thornton has still been such a real good player in the league, because he's smart, great hands. You know, he never moved with any type of real quickness or
speed. He didn't
get
faster.
No, but the game worked to his, because you can't get the puck from him. You can't get the puck from him. You know, I was going to say, when we were talking about this a little bit earlier, you know, it was interesting watching the Patriots in free agency. And, you know, a lot of their players left. And I heard Jabari Greer. Did you see what he said when they asked him about the Patriots? He said, you know what I would say? He goes, they help you maximize your dollars. They put you in a setup where you know you can go outside the organization to maximize your goals. It really was.
Great point.
I thought it was really, he said, and like, you know, for Nate Solder and Deion Lewis and Malcolm Butler and those guys, he said, like, they set them up to maximize their dollars. What's wrong with that?
Everybody wants a former champion.
Right? That's exactly what he said. Danny Amendola, everybody. It was really interesting. So now back to JVR, you know, and I think there's no question in my mind he's going to be offered significant dollars on good term. I don't think,
but
it's
maybe
going
not
to be,
like it was before. Like, he's not going to get,
well, Marleau
Kyle
got Oposo
money or Andrew Ladman.
He got $6.75 million, Patrick Marleau. I don't
for
have
three
any,
years.
I know. I have no doubt in my mind.
Well, he's 10 years older.
That Van Riemsdyk's going to get that at least on a 5-year deal. I'm not saying seven, but 6.75 times at the very least.
But see, I think Dave hit on an important point. I'm not sure he fits what they're all about. Like, we talk about, should, like, can they bring him back? Can they fit him?
And that's fine to say, except somebody has to replace him.
Yeah, like, let's say Andreas Janssen is the guy who takes some of those minutes. He's not scoring 30.
Well, he's not initially. It's going to take time. And I think, in you know, it looked like Carl Grundstrom was going to be the Leo Komarov.
Yeah, agreed.
And, you know, he's got an edge, but he doesn't have the experience of a Leo. Leo is Leo because of his years of experience.
Right.
You know, I mean, 8 years ago, I was watching Leo play in the Corrala Cup against the Russians for the Finns, you know, terrorizing every Russian player that he played with in the KHL. And so there's lots of experience there. And, you know, Grundstrom won't have that, but he skates very well, and I think he will be an effective player when he comes over here.
But if you're the Edmonton Oilers with cap room, there is no way you're not looking at James Van Riemsdyk to play with Connor McDavid. There's no way.
You think he'd fit with McDavid?
Like, absolutely would, because all you got to do is get to the right spots on the ice as McDavid carries the puck up.
See, you said he doesn't skate like Marleau, but he moves pretty well and he gets to the right spots.
Yeah.
And he'd be playing with a guy that can buy as much time as you need to get to that spot because he owns the puck.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And that's, while those guys aren't easy to play with, superstars, a guy that plays without the puck is James Van Riemsdyk.
Yeah.
He plays well without the puck.
Yeah, he doesn't need the puck to be an effective player.
I don't know if they can they sign another guy approaching 30 to a long-term contract?
Well, I can ask you that. I can flip the question around. Can they afford not to?
Yeah.
But when you say
they need to change the dynamic up there. In 33 games, in 33 games, the last 33 games, I believe it's 33 games, it might be 32. Milan Lucic has one goal and six assists playing 16 minutes a night. And a lot of that with good players.
But when you say JVR doesn't necessarily fit what they're trying to do, Jonas, I mean, he's playing like 15 and a half, 16 minutes a night. He doesn't get a lot of even strength time relative to most other forwards.
Mm-hmm.
He's not out there with 6 minutes left protecting a one or a two-goal lead, whatever the case may be. He's an elite power play contributor on the top unit. I get all of that. Are they then looking to trade a little bit of offense, understanding that maybe a younger kid like a Janssen comes up, he costs less, they're willing to trade a handful of goals, or maybe a little more than a handful of goals, for a guy that they trust more in their own end? I mean,
Maybe you just want better all-around players? Like, I think there's a problem in hockey where good offensive players who aren't great defensively get focused on, whereas good defensive players who don't bring you much offense, we don't talk about so much the offense. Does that make sense, what I'm trying to say?
Absolutely, it does. It does.
Yeah. I just think,
because, like, this guy's a winger.
You know what's
right?
Interesting, though? You bring up his minutes right away. Maybe he's at his absolute best when he plays 15 minutes a night.
Maybe. And that was I wrote that exact story earlier in the year. Like, maybe this is just the perfect way to use him. He's not going against top pairs.
Yeah.
He's like a weapon you can have deeper in your lineup. He's great on the power play. Like, maybe this is perfect, but can you have that guy making $6 or $7 million?
Well,
like,
when I broke into the league, the Sixers had a sixth man, and he won the sixth man every year in the NBA, Bobby Jones. And he played like 22 minutes a night or something out of 48. And I was like, are you kidding me? And I believe he was a full type 1 diabetic. And so that was part of it. But part of it was that when he played 28 minutes a night, he wasn't very effective.
Yeah.
When he played 22 or 23 minutes a night, he was a superstar for those 22 or 23
minutes. Right,
when he's
your eighth best forward, you're a good team.
But that's why I don't put a lot of stock in points per 60 minutes.
How come?
For exactly the same reason. Because I know what you're trying to do. I know you're trying to find a level playing field. It's not a level playing field.
Because of the competition.
Well, and because some players like to the six-man point, to the 15 minutes versus 18. There's a big difference between playing 15 minutes and 18 minutes. I think a lot of mistakes are made on that per points per 60 minutes in terms of signing players.
But in the case of Van Riemsdyk, he's like top 10 in the league in goals per 60 in all situations. You don't.
And the
think
other thing
something?
Is, off the ice, he looks.
Those
after
aren't the
himself.
Guys that you're going to do it at. You're trying to leverage the points per 60 based on guys that haven't produced at James Van Riemsdyk's level.
I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, where you're taking like a little sample size and saying if you give him more minutes, he'll be the same type of productivity.
Yeah. Not the case at all.
Yeah.
Just not.
Except for those stars.
Yeah, well, I mean, they produce. I mean, but you know, when I look at JVR, you know, and I think, like, I don't think it's so much about what the Leafs are going to do. I think it's what the marketplace is going to dictate.
Well,
I think they'd love to have James Van
Riemsdyk,
right? Yeah, but so I think he fits for the Leafs, but the marketplace is going to dictate that the dollars don't fit for them.
If he fits for the Leafs, why haven't they offered him a contract?
Because they might already know what he's going to be asking for. He might already have asked for $7 million. If you're JVR, why wouldn't you have asked for $7 million?
You know, I got to this point in my free agent year. I'd never been a free agent. I got to this point, and it started about December when I'd roll the dice and played into my free agent year. And, and then Mike Milbury was the assistant GM, and he came to me and said, "Yeah, you know, we think we're ready to sign." And I'm like, "We're halfway through the year now, Mike. I'm not that interested." And then they made three or four more runs at me during the second half of the year, and I'm like, and for the first time in my career that year. It was then 84 games. I played 84 games. And as it got on, I'm like, I think I'll wait. Like, I've rolled the dice this far, like he has.
Well, and he's thinking the closer you get, the more, like, maybe I can get him pinned down for less, right?
He might finish with 35 goals.
Well, he's already set his career high, right? Single season.
Mm-hmm.
Two last night got him to 31. Good to see you.
Great to see you guys. I missed this.
Senators tonight?
Senators in Dallas. It'd be my third Dallas game in 4 nights. I feel like I'm part of the Dallas Stars. I had them. Montreal played very well against them on Tuesday night, and one of the better games I've seen Montreal play, and I've seen some not very good Montreal games over the last 6 weeks. Was that tactful?
And, yes, it is.
Very diplomatic.
I did the Leafs and Dallas last night.
Why do we have to be diplomatic? When they're no good, they're no good.
They're not
when
very
they play
good.
Bad, they're yeah. bad.
They're not very good.
I don't know. Again, it goes back to the whole sensitivity issue. You know, did I ever tell you my Tony Amonte story? I love Tony Amonte. His dad, Louie, working blue-collar guy from Boston. World Junior Tournament, Tony hadn't played as much as he thought. Came out after the game, was kind of a little bit moping. And his dad said, you want to play more? And Tony kind of got up on the balls of his feet that he was going to get a little bit of thing. His dad said, play better.
So true.
Great Boston accent.
If you actually get, you know, any one of the Canadians one-on-one and have a chat with them, they'll tell you exactly how they're playing. They're not playing very well. They're not. Yeah. They know it.
Long year. Long year
yes,
in Montreal. Speaking of long years, Ottawa as well. And you're on them tonight.
Yes, it has been.
Well, all I know is this. Dallas is in a race for the playoffs. They got to win tonight.
You bet.
They got He's, 2 points.
Yeah, but they had to win Tuesday night. They had to win last night.
But like, this is where you start to fall off, right? This is where you fall off.
I know.
Don't want to be giving up game tires with 10 seconds left or whatever it was a couple nights ago.
Enjoy your St. Patrick's Day, guys.
We will. Dave Poulin, our hockey insider, brought to you by Finance It. Add a payment plan to your tool belt. And break down large price tags into easy, affordable payments with Finance It. Some Blue Jays news. A minor leaguer suspended for PED use. We'll tell you about it. Overdrive, TSN 1050, the TSN Go app. I know the answer to this question, Jonas, so I'm not going to ask you. We haven't really talked about this, Craig. Are you a big golf guy? Like, Are you a Golf Channel viewer? Are you there for the majors? What's your degree of interest in watching?
We had this discussion last week, and I asked Jonas on Sunday what he was doing.
Yeah, Craig was not happy with me.
Yeah, oh no.
He said, what was I doing during whatever tournament that was?
Sunday. It was the Tiger Woods. It was last Sunday.
I was not watching.
He was watching the Knicks and the Raptors and some...
Spring training,
baseball.
Or what Craig and Ray have referred to as preseason baseball, which I don't support.
But here's what was good. So Jonah said, I didn't see the Rockets-Raptors game on Friday night, so I wanted to catch up with the Raptors, and I was watching spring training for my fantasy.
Yeah, I wanted to see if Josh Donaldson was going to play.
Come
he
on.
Wasn't, so.
Yeah. We had Corey Connors on. So we had a...
I'm hooked again on this Tiger thing. And, you know, we're talking about the redemption story.
How can you not be unless your name is Jonas Siegel?
Bear with me here, pal.
And I'll just tune out. I'll go do something.
No, this is going to be the best 5 minutes of radio you've ever listened to. The redemption story, though, right, is build up a guy. He gets torn down in whatever way. It can be self-inflicted. It can be otherwise done. It can be a mixture of both. Build a guy back up. But what's different about this redemption story is that I don't think there's a person on this planet, Tiger included, who thought it was possible that he could get to this point.
I disagree with you about Tiger.
He believes it now, Craig.
You don't go through those surgeries and do what he did.
Before the fusion, though. That was the fourth back surgery.
He exposed himself to out-and-out ridicule on the golf course.
Mm-hmm.
There is no way you're doing that if you don't believe you can come back. Because Tiger is nobody's fool.
But when you're... this is pre-fusion surgery I'm talking about. He's lying flat on his back. He can't even get up and walk to the bathroom. There had to be moments of doubt.
There's moments of doubt, but there's a belief. He had a belief. He worked at this whole thing to try to get back to be the best.
I think
that's what drove him. That's what drives him.
So I may not care about it, but I think what's interesting about it, there's not a comparable in sports to like this exact kind of story. Like you talk about redemption stories, we see that all the time. But what comparable is there to a guy who was the most dominant at his sport by far, like in sports maybe ever? Then goes down for a variety of reasons, and then tries to get back up. Like, A, it doesn't happen in individual sports, and then B, it doesn't really happen in team sports, right? Like, there's not a comparable.
The other thing that...
Like, Roger Federer, sort of, but he didn't have all this drama. And
but
like,
the other thing that seems to be unique about this situation is that for all the physical stress that he went through with, you know, training with the Navy SEALs, and it kind of broke his body down, and he had the knee thing at the 08 U.S. Open, and then all the back surgeries, and was he ever going to be able to stand up straight again, let alone, you know, get through 18 holes of golf, get through 72 over a four-day weekend, do it at a competitive level and all that. It was the physical... The physical ailments he had that caused him to essentially disappear, he's come through those, and it seems like he's come through those with a cleaner frame of mind. It's like all of that psychological weight that he was carrying pre-back injuries, but post everything that went down, the sordid stuff in his personal life.
I don't think he carries psychological weight. You cannot be the dominant player on the tour with a kick-ass attitude.
But he wasn't dominant anymore after all that went down. But, he wasn't the same guy.
Yeah, I know. But, like, you know, you look at it, though, but, like, what drives competitors is that quest to be the very best. That's what drives. Like, I don't care if you're lying flat on your back or you're winning the U.S. Open on a bum knee. That's what drives competitors. And Peter Forsberg tried to come back numerous times from the heel injury. He couldn't do it. But you know what drove Peter Forsberg? Was that quest to be the best again.
Right, but I'm saying all of that baggage, all of that crap is far enough now in the past that he's doing exactly what you're saying with a much clearer mind.
I don't know if it's clear or not. I thought he was very clear when he was in the throes of all the off-course behavior.
Well, you can't help but be distracted by that, though, Craig.
Well, he wasn't. I think you're making a leap here, saying that he's psychologically clearer. I can't make that assessment.
I'm just reading his body language. I'm listening to what he's saying. I'm hearing tone of voice. I'm seeing a guy smiling.
I think he's happy to be back. I'm not saying he's not happy to be back. I don't know if he's psychologically clearer. That guy owned the PGA Tour. He owned it. He was pretty clear of mind.
Well, what era are we talking about? Was he absolutely the dominant player? Post 08 knee surgery, after the 08 U.S. Open,
But do you know why he came out and was on the course and he was ridiculed, Scott. And there was only one reason he was ready to put up with that ridicule, because he wanted to be that dominant player once again. That's what drove him.
Well, I have no doubt that he ever stopped desiring to be the most dominant player. But what I'm saying is there was a lot going on there, and anybody would have been affected by it, and it would have affected anybody's level of performance. I'm not saying he still wasn't one of the best golfers in the world or the best golfer in the world at times, but he clearly wasn't the same player after all that went down as he was prior.
I'm just saying physically. I think we're getting into a discussion about the psychological. He's clear in his mind. I don't know.
He just looks to me like he's a competitive beast, but B, I think he's enjoying it more.
You haven't seen him for 5 years be at this state. So that's why it looks good to you. He hasn't been anywhere near this. Nobody's seen him.
But I think
he's missed every cut.
I think you're playing amateur psychologist, Scotty. I don't know anything though.
But he seems to be a different guy to me. It feels like a bunch of weight is off his shoulders. That's what I'm saying.
Okay, we'll concede that that's how you see it.
Thank you.
We can't argue with your opinions.
Right.
They're your opinions.
Therefore, I win. In my own mind.
You're fake news.
Proline Best Bets coming up. Overdrive, TSN 1050. Time for today's Best Bets, brought to you by Proline. I'm on the Capitals to win by at least two as the home plus over the Islanders tonight. I'm on Dallas as the visitor at Ottawa. And I'm on the Raptors to win by at least 6 points, take them at home over the Dallas Mavericks. Throw down $20. This ticket will make you rich. $68.80.
Last time you said that, I had the contradiction. I was right and you were wrong.
Which one was that again?
You took the Panthers on the road against Tampa Bay.
It did go to overtime, though.
Like, He still lost. Doesn't matter that went to overtime.
I don't like your Dallas Stars pick either.
I didn't.
You don't like Dallas over the Senators tonight?
No, I think the Senators are playing free and loose and fancy, and I don't like the way the Stars are playing.
They just swept Florida. I know that. They went down and beat the Panthers and Lightning, but no Mark Stone. This is a game. Isn't this a game you have to win if you're going to make the playoffs, if you're the Dallas Stars?
I mean, it's the same thing Calgary against San Jose at home.
Just because you have to win it doesn't mean you'll win it.
That's right.
You can find my picks on Twitter at TSN 1050 Radio. I don't think Craig Button will be looking for them. And you can get way into the game with ProLine. It's a sports betting game that lets you turn small wagers into big excitement. Before you wager, get the latest odds, event info, and matchup stats on your phone. ProLine, get way into the game.
I like the back and forth. Like, we're challenging you on your picks. Isn't this good?
Wouldn't you win more money if you bet the Senators? They're probably the underdog.
You would.
Gotcha there. Huh?
But you won't win more money if you bet the Senators and they don't
Scott's
win.
Scott's going to be saying, Jonas and Craig, they're out of here when the pro line thing comes up. You don't want to be mind. Questioned.
I don't. Well, there's a reason I'm very careful about how much money I lay down and how often.
I'm kidding you.
I have not been particularly successful.
Yeah. Do you know why all those casinos keep popping up?
People like
it. Because it's a money-making proposition. They don't lose money. Lotteries come up. Do you know why they don't lose money? It's a real money-making endeavor.
Just a pleasant reminder that our guests over the phone today appeared on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Maple Toyota takes away the fears of buying a pre-owned vehicle by sharing service history, lien history, and accident history. Visit mapletoyota.ca. Leafs and Habs tomorrow night. We've got 20 seconds, boys. One quick final thought. Oh, I'm putting you on the spot. This is what we call dragging it out on a mail-it-in Friday. 10 seconds.
10 seconds.
Thomas Mackenzie is playing his former team. In case you didn't know, big story.
We like it. I will be reading about that in the Athletic tomorrow.
Are they wearing their St. Pat's uniforms?
I don't think so.
Darn.
Hayes is back Monday, TSN 1050.